The Last Word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
Okay, let's talk about the reopening of the schools. Lucinda Creighton, you wrote about this in the Business Post yesterday. What's your position on the early reopening of schools for all?
Hi, Matt. I suppose my position is that I think there can't be any further delay in reopening schools. All children from preschool right up to leaving cert at this stage need face-to-face interaction with their teachers. It is absolutely essential, and it needs to happen, and it needs to happen, you know, within a matter of days. Children are really suffering from being locked down and stuck at home without any real educational opportunity, and obviously children with disabilities, children from disadvantaged backgrounds are more adversely impacted, and so the need for them is more urgent. But actually all children need to be considered in this, and all children I think are suffering very significantly from the current closure of schools.
But what about the danger that maybe they could spread COVID between themselves and back to their parents who might be vulnerable, that it may not be fair on the teachers to put them in harm's way?
Well, look, I mean, I suppose the starting point is whether you believe education is an essential service or not. And I fundamentally believe that education is, it's a constitutional right, and it is essential. And we have lots of essential services that are continuing to operate, and that's just a fact, and it's a necessity. We have DIY shops open, we have off licences open, we have obviously got supermarkets open and many others, construction sites and so on in most respects. And, you know, I consider education to be as important as all of the above. So,
maybe even more important in some respects, Lucinda.
At a minimum, as important. I think it's safe to say it's more important in most respects. But, you know, so that's the starting point. I think most teachers want to be in the classroom, certainly the teachers I talk to. My own sister's a teacher, and I think they're absolutely desperate to be back in the classroom with their students. We have to make it as safe as possible. It's never going to be risk-free. Of course, children, we know children don't transmit the virus as quickly or, you know, in any way the same degree as adults do, and that's been proven by countless studies over the past 12 months all over the world. But there will be some degree of risk, and obviously the new variants make it more risky. But, you know, I think you have to balance the risks associated with keeping children out of the classroom for, you know, the best part of 12 months at this stage. It just can't continue. You know, they are lonely, they are miserable, many of them are having severe mental health impacts and huge educational setbacks for all children. So, you know, I think we have to look at this in a proportionate way and say, yes, there are risks, they have to be mitigated and minimised, but children have to go back to school.
OK, we also have Dr. Niall Muldoon with us, the Ombudsman for Children. What do you make of Lucinda's assessment as to the damage this may be doing to many of our children?
Well, I think it's fair comment. I think it's been well backed up by a number of pieces of research. My colleague in Wales, the Children's Commissioner over there, did a survey with over 20,000 children from 7 years of age upwards and asked them about their concerns and the impact. And the two headlines for her are the impact on learning and the impact on loneliness. That sort of sense of connection, that sense of purpose, that sense of achievement and fun and joy that children have is really missing for them now. And obviously the quality of learning they're getting regardless, and Wales have done a much better job in the social divide and also the digital divide over there. They provided laptops and broadband to every school that needed it, and they also had an online platform developed 3 years ago for every school in the country. But they still feel the learning is not the same quality, but also, more importantly, the mental health issues are really serious. The loneliness and the isolation is strong.
And now, would you worry about long-term implications? You know, that if children don't learn how to socialise, or if they're absent from socialising for a long time, that might impact on them throughout life?
Absolutely. I mean, we know attachment is a crucial thing for every child, but I mean, the younger children will find it difficult to return to the early years services. The older children will find it difficult to start re-engaging with friends and family and the school setting. It's going to be there for a while to come. There's no doubt about it. Some children will be resilient, will bounce back fairly quickly, and their well-being will catch up with it. But many children will be left behind, particularly the disadvantaged children and the disabled cohort. disadvantaged children just won't go back to school. That we're going to lose them completely. We're going to have a huge cohort that are going to be unemployed and fully, the education won't be there for them in the future. But the children with disability are the biggest losers in this. It's been huge impact on them. Parents are contacting me constantly with concerns about their children and their mental health.
And what about then preschool children? Because there's been such an emphasis placed in recent years about the benefits to early years education and sociability of children, getting mm-hmm. them into childcare situations at an earlier age than we might have done in the past. And how much of that now is being lost?
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge thing. We were late in Europe. We were late in figuring out that the first 1,000 days are so important for children. And the government started investing about 2010 into the early year services so that children could get an opportunity. And it's the best well-known way of bringing children out of poverty and out of socioeconomic difficulty is to educate them and give them educational opportunities early. But we're now hearing that children, you know, if you were born since the first lockdown, you may not have met your brothers or your cousins or your grandmother or your aunts and uncles, and you wouldn't have the play opportunities that everybody else had. You know, you may become much more reticent to mix with other children. So that's something that you have to be really concerned about into the future. If up to 3 years of age and you spent already a year in lockdown, your understanding of the world is going to be very narrow, and you're going to be very clingy and lacking self-confidence as regard to that, as a result of that.
Now, I'll stay with us and Lucinda as well. I want to bring in another guest because I want to talk a little bit more about the childcare issue. Karen Klintz is Chief Executive of Tigers Childcare. At this stage, what is the situation? Is it childcare only been provided to the parents of essential workers?
It's essential workers and vulnerable children at the moment. But I mean, we would still have a real concern. It's really interesting to listen to the two guests speaking there, because that's exactly what we are seeing for young children coming into services. We're seeing real difficulties. So we would have had, if you were settling 10 babies in a baby room, in a baby classroom, you might have two of those 10 who need that little bit of extra comfort and extra time to settle in. But what we're seeing now is about 9 out of every 10 are finding that really difficult because they haven't been exposed to the norm of what you would in your young childhood. They're not seeing different faces. They're not seeing noises. They don't even know what other babies are. And so there were expecting to, instead of having this gradual bit of development, the children when they're younger, actually all they need really for the first 6 months is really the parents, the biological needs to be met to make an attachment to those key people. And after that, children naturally develop relationships with others around them. But they actually don't have others around them. A lot of children are in houses on their own. A lot of children are one-child families. And then the first year of their life, they're now just spending that in their home with nobody else. And so they come into our service and they don't know what this is. And it's compacted by the fact that we can't allow the parents to come in where they would have come in and they would have settled the baby, settled the child in, and they use the parents to make sure this environment is safe. Now they're being handed out a door, they're being taken into a room, and they have no idea what's going on around them. And you have to ask the question, when a child's brain is developing so fast, like 90% of what we learn will become in the first 5 years, and we are limiting that. Does that actually affect how the brain is going to develop? Will it have a long-term impact? And we think it will. And at the moment, we're seeing children, obviously vulnerable children, are coming back in, and that's great. And we have children, key workers, and we're able to support them. But is a mum and dad who are both struggling to work from home with a baby strapped in a buggy or with a young child running around the house where they can't give it adequate care and attention, those children are vulnerable, but they're not on a vulnerable list. You know, parents cannot hold down jobs. We're dealing with parents who are very stressed, and that obviously has an impact on their children. They're worried about, you know, being able to hold their job down and how they're going to come out of this. So they're worried, and they're trying to do all of those jobs at home to keep them employment while also trying to give enough care and attention to their children. It's an impossible task to ask anyone to do.
Lucinda, Karen has just brought up a topic I was going to raise with you, that this isn't just about children, is it? This is also an awful lot about parents and the stresses and strains that they're facing by having almost sort of 24/7 time with their children. Much as they may love them, there are times when perhaps they need a break from them.
Yeah, sure. And I mean, you know, this can be, this argument, I think, can be really used against parents, you know, and you see people sort of tritely saying on social media, oh, you know, you just want school to be a childcare facility for your kids. And I think that's to really underestimate how much parents value and understand the importance of education to their children. But of course, it's a fact that, you know, parents are, you know, who would ordinarily be out in their in their place of work are trying to work from home. Most people don't have the luxury of, you know, spare rooms to convert into offices, to have nice desks and, you know, stands for their computers and so on. You know, most people are struggling to work from, you know, from their bedroom or from their living room, and at the same time they're trying to homeschool, or if it's younger children, you know, keep them occupied and do all the things that you feel you need to do with them, you know, the stimulating stuff like the art and crafts and the reading and everything. But if you can't do that and do a full-time job, so it's really difficult. And I just think everybody is massively stressed out. Everybody, certainly in my circle of friends and contacts, you know, they're just under huge pressure to keep the lights on, to keep paying the bills, to give their children, you know, the emotional support that they need at a time that is extremely difficult for their children, and just basically keep it all together. And I definitely can relate to that. I have a 1-year-old, a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old. So, and I'm working, you know, full time running a business. And so is my husband. So like it's just extremely challenging. And I think I certainly don't think we can belittle the experience of parents. But most importantly, in all of this is the impact that this is having on children. You know, a stressed out parent has a really negative impact. I think Karen has really outlined it very well in terms of the sort of the attachment issues and the fact that children, you know, my little boy who's one has seen his granny, you know, once since this whole thing started last March, you know, has barely seen his cousins, so doesn't really know his extended family. You know, that's really sad. And of course that has an impact on children. And, you know, there is potentially, I think, you know, long-term damage for children in terms of socialization, in terms of just their general well-being, their overall development and their educational attainment as they get older. And we will definitely pay the price for this, you know. And we look back at scandals of the past and really poor decisions that were made by governments and institutions in this country, and yet we're presiding over this for the last 12 months. I think there was an excuse last March when we knew nothing, but we know an awful lot more now, and there are measures that can be taken to as safely as possible get our children and their teachers back into the classrooms. But it just has to happen.
Niall Muldoon is Children's Ombudsman. I want to read a listener comment in which goes against much of what we've just heard. This is from Caroline, who says, the more people go on about how children are suffering, the most through all of this and more through all of this, I fear, we're creating a society built on victim mentality. If we keep telling the kids how hard it must be for them, aren't they missing out? Poor them. Isn't it possible they will all grow up thinking that they've been hard done by? Blame this period for all the reasons why they can't achieve happiness in their lives. Children are resilient and they will bounce back. I have 2 school-going children who do not seem to be suffering terribly through all of this. They miss their friends, but generally they're okay. Niall, what would you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's no doubt that with any luck, there'll be 60-70% of our children will bounce back and be resilient to that. And that's great credit to our society and our families. But we're talking about the vulnerable here. You've always got to look at the vulnerable when you're trying to assess where the damage will be. Even within the vulnerable, some will bounce back. But the reality is this is a once-in-100-years situation, which is really unique and is extraordinary for anybody to have to cope with. To say that we're undermining the resilience and the strength of character of our children just by acknowledging it isn't exactly accurate. So I can understand that some people will expect their children to bounce back, and that's fantastic, and hopefully that'll be most of the children, but we have to make sure that we plan and prepare for the children who are vulnerable. And what we're talking about from my point of view specifically is all children have been affected by it as far as I'm concerned, but certainly there is a cohort of children that are socioeconomically disadvantaged already, and the children with disability who are disadvantaged already are now being even more so, losing 30 weeks of school time. It's going to make a huge effort for our country and our government to plan for their reinstatement of what they've lost. And I think from my point of view, I asked way back in September of last year, what are the plans for the lockdown and what are the plans for the Leaving Cert? And none of them have been clear. It hasn't come to fruition yet, certainly, and the plans are still not in place. The union's only met with the minister today to decide what the plans are for next Monday. that's not the way we can facilitate confidence.
There is a suggestion that although the leaving certs might go back next week and maybe the fifth years in secondary school and the junior infants, senior infants in first class and primary, it'll then be over a succeeding number of weeks. But because of the Easter holidays as well, it could be that first, second and fourth years in secondary school will not get back to school until the middle of April.
Yeah, and that's, again, you're adding an enormous amount of time onto that. And again, within that cohort, Matt, we're still not sure if the children with special education need in mainstream schools who aren't in special classes are going to be coming back within that period of time. They're a vulnerable group that needs extra support as well and have been regressing. So, again, from my point of view, we should have been planning for this last September for the possibility. And we should even now, whatever plans we have in place now, we still don't know that those plans would hold firm if we have a further outbreak in September. Yeah. Will we be using the same plans or will we have to negotiate again and again and again? That sort of uncertainty constantly for the teachers, the parents, the children and all the people involved is really, really disconcerting.
Okay. Karen, can I just finish briefly with you? What would you and a childcare provider like to see in the government's plan tomorrow?
I think there needs to be some type of alignment of forces as well. I mean, we're looking at it, I suppose, for us, it's just taking in a little bit of an extra cohort. But for us, we obviously have colleagues who have children in school, so they might not be able to return to work if schools did open at the same time as well. And also, we would have school-aged childcare children and both vulnerable and frontline workers that at the moment we're accommodating. However, if our ECC classes come back, we'll no longer be able to accommodate them. So it kind of, there needs to be joined up thinking between all of the different types of education as well, because each impacts the other.
Karen Clintz from Tigers Childcare, Lucinda Creighton, Chief Executive of Vulcan Consulting and columnist with the Business Post, and Neil Muldoon, the Children's Ombudsman. Thank you all very much for being with us here on The Last Word of Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.